Welcome to this podcast, The First Lady of Germiston, Life According to the Chaotic Order of Viv Vermaak. Who is Viv? Well, she's an award-winning spokesperson and acclaimed journalist with an eclectic point of view of the world around her and an even more unique way to walk through life. I sit down with Viv throughout this podcast series as we chat about her ethos of quote-unquote dismotivation and how she embraces the chaos. Enjoy.
In 20 years that we've been living in the same street, we've never spoken to each other.
I get
really?
That.
But, yes, but now we have to talk. So the people have different languages and we never learn to understand how to talk to each other. So the one half like me, because we don't know to have the conversation, would rather sell the house than to have the conversation. Because it's too difficult to tell your neighbor, you're out of line, stop your shit. Other people,
why?
It's too
because
difficult.
That will kill you.
Not necessarily. It's
that
just
was trouble for you.
The friction of the conversation is difficult. So now at the substation, you have the people who want to protest. And I go, why do you want to protest? The guy with the illegal connection is here. Look, I'm touching him. His name, which I can't mean. Yeah, it's him. No. We must go and protest. They'd rather go and protest. Outside council.
Okay.
Then talk to the guy who's making the illegal connections.
At school, now you're going to have a fight with someone in your class. Who's going to settle this? You, this person, or the teacher?
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. That's why governments exist. And people like liberals or the people who tend to blame everything on government, we all do it because it's more convenient. I can assure you, we'd rather pay taxes and be shot by the police and have the conversations ourselves. I saw this now. First class.
Okay.
So we have to give the government its due. Its role is far bigger than running the road. Their job is to have the conversations we don't have the guts to have. Their job is to take the blame for things we don't want to fix. Because you can blame the government.
You're a reborn liberal.
No, I've unliberated myself. I don't know what other liberals are doing, but I've done
so
it
previously,
the bad way.
What was liberal Viv? What does that mean? What does liberation mean? Because I feel...
I was a bad liberal. I think classic liberalism speaks to tolerance, which I do think I have. But I think the way I did liberalism was really a kinder, gentler racism. And what liberals do...
In what way? That you see color or you see class?
No, we pretend that we don't.
No,
We pretend that equality...
But that
means evenness.
Okay, but that's also silly for me. I don't understand. If you are white or you're Chinese, I'm saying, so you're European or you're whatever it is, like a British-centric or whatever it is, I don't know, white, right?
Yeah.
Or you are Indian or
now.
You are whatever. Yeah, we're getting into that now. But my point is that it's an aesthetic thing.
No,
so,
it's not an aesthetic thing.
Witnessing race is not racist. So I want to identify. The thing is that it's a swear word to be able to say, like, you're black now, or you are white, because of the emphasis, I'm white, you know, or you're Indian, or you're colored. So I'm just saying to you, like a leopard and a panther are looking at each other and being like, you got spots, and you're all nice and silky smooth black, you understand? Now, I'm not sitting there saying that you are kind of one other aesthetic color than I am, but I'm not going to mention that you got the spot because you're a leopard, and that's the...
I'm saying that by making racism about race...
No, that's what I'm saying.
We've made it about the wrong thing.
Of course.
But now by denying that there are differences, we're now denying a lot of differences on a variety of levels
of
and blaming it on race when it's much more complicated than race. And what liberals have tended, or the way I've done liberalism, is just to wipe differences, including skin color, which comes as a proxy of other things, that we just pretend it's not there. And that is the biggest sin you can do to somebody else, to deny the differences.
I
Exactly, identity. What does it feel like to hold you?
No, we're not. No, because I'm trying to understand why it is that liberalism is a swear word, because it is. I'm sorry. The thing is that the way it's been redefined in our new age of society, like, it is basically you can say anything about anything without having to be allowed to say anything about anything. That's what it is. We have diluted society, and I mean, to such a point where you can't actually say shit. You can't say shit. You can't do shit. You can't be shit. You can't whatever it is, but you're allowed to do all of these things because you're going to be ostracized at any single one point that you are, that you open your mouth and you try to almost, when you start to explain yourself, problematic.
Because the thing is problematic.
That, yes.
And I blame liberalism, the way I did it, for it, because we so rushed so forward to be kind and gentle that it becomes a habit to ignore ugly things. Okay. And that's what I saw in politics. And then when it comes to the time to have the conversation, you don't know how to have it. And when what happens in my street, when we had this fight, this cataclysmic, that this pressure point of the substation and the electricity hijacking of my street, that the agitators will say in these words, it has come, the guy's voice is not like this. Okay. He has a deep, booming voice, like the baddie in Lion King. It has come to my attention that the clever blacks are working with the whites and pointing fingers at certain
street.
Houses.
Okay.
This will not be allowed.
So what happens then? What do people say
back? The clever blacks are working with the whites. Now, I'm more liberal and very offended that you can use such language in my company.
So what about a clever black? Aren't they offended?
Not at all. The clever blacks are also the silent blacks. So the clever blacks
but
say
I'm saying you can't. Like I'm saying, to even say that you're a clever black, it insinuates that there are quote-unquote dumb blacks in the same vicinity.
Don't talk to me about it. Talk to him about it.
Anyway, I know. I'm saying, I'm talking,
so that's the way, that's the way the argument is phrased. Now, as you know, race is very sensitive. So nobody's going to come and challenge that, because the moment you interview that phrase, you're the baddie. At the same time.
But he approached race directly. White with clever black.
Yes. Anyway, so now I'm going, I can't go into this Imbizo. A big Imbizo has been called now at the substation. I can't go into this Imbizo as a white. There's like this target on my back. So I said, okay, listen. It's not that we're pointing fingers, but people can see the legal connections coming from your palm with the eyes.
You're really apologizing for yourself.
So then he goes, this narrative that all blacks are criminals have to stop. This is a new type of racism. So it's not all blacks, but in your case, it's very obvious. So anyway, this thing, what am I, just stealing electricity? Your people stole the whole country. So it went from zero to Jan van Riebeek in 30 seconds, and that doesn't help conversation. And now you're liberal. And
white people stole. They did. They did.
So, anyway.
But so now steal the country.
So now it comes to you in these words, as a liberal, because, no, people aren't racist. Racism isn't a problem in this country. Now you understand the problem. And I am a writer. In my head, I'm this great liberated thinker. And I work for the Institute for Race Relations. We've done surveys.
Right.
And they have said, race is really not a big issue for most people in this country.
It isn't.
Well, it is an issue. You can say it's not the biggest issue, but it will come.
But we have many issues. No. I get that. Sure. So, I mean, the thing again, like, we can isolate race and say, okay, but it will come up, but so will, again, so will, let's say, poor versus rich. So will, let's say,
they're interconnected. That's what I've come to respect. So that man has no, he's playing Judas Malema games, and he knows he can rouse the crowd. He has a point, because in this country, poor and rich are very interconnected with black. Look, he was out of line. So anyway, I'm going like, what? Now we are talking black, white. I can't. It's literally in those words. But I'm not going to that Imbizo white. There's blooming. There's absolutely, I'll get slaughtered.
Okay, so you.
So my response is that I don't think this is a productive framework. So from now on in South Africa, we can just regard ourselves, we're all black, okay? Some of us are just light black. So as you can see,
I love this story. Yeah.
I responded with an appropriate level of maturity.
And how was the I mean, the crowd responds.
No, some people laugh because what must you do? That's my way to be a clown. So they were all black now, okay? Some of us are just light black. So I arrived there announcing myself as a light black, and the people who are not from South Africa are exotics. So apparently we had clever blacks, light blacks, exotics or people from Limpopo and northwards, and I assume they're also classics that are just people from South Africa.
Okay.
Anyway, 50 Shades of Black met at the corner, okay, and they didn't know how to talk to each other.
You redefined our color spectrum. In addition to add to your alumni, your what you'll leave as a legacy.
So I'm not a white liberal anymore. I'm a light black. And
okay,
in Mons, that's why I'm saying I'm a light black. And in Mons Road, we started defining each other because the racial tensions got too high. We only got a slight reprieve when we started grouping ourselves by the colors red, blue, and yellow.
Did it work?
Yes, because at least we weren't black and white anymore. Now you were yellow or blue. So thank God, I put on the WhatsApp group, thank God it's not an argument about white or black anymore.
And people
and
are
I was a blue. And I'm very grateful that I was never a yellow, and I never went to switch other people's electricity off. I stayed a blue till the end. So I went up the roof a white liberal, and I came down a light black blue.
You're being identified as something. Look, you can't put on the ballot form, I'm a blue South African now. You're going to have to mark it off somewhere. It's fine. Don't worry. So again, semantics are unimportant. Right. But so how has your identity grown from that liberal?
Well, I've noticed what an idiot I was. Because I know liberals, you know, we say that we're not racist, but we are. We say that we don't believe we've had, or we misunderstand, and you know, nobody's superior to another one. But I can tell you now, and I'm quite a liberal, progressive individual. Deep in my heart, I still believe that I was somehow, and it's not just that I understood, it was the benefit of privilege, that somehow my culture was somehow superior. And you can't admit it, you'll never. No, it's just history and that. But I did believe it because I thought civilization or economic richness is the result of the way we were in the world. I now understand we are the result of the world is. I misunderstood the cause and effect dynamic. And that's massive in life. When you think you're the cause of something and you're actually the result, then you go and sit on the roof and you think 10 times all the time, oh, God, I have nothing to do with this. It's not that, I'm going to say it bluntly, that the whites had a better system, that's why they advanced more than the blacks. The whites are the way they are because they are the result of an unprecedented period of stability in which they happen to be.
Oppressive.
No. It's more than that. It goes back 250,000 years to how groups behave under pressure, as I saw in my street. Mm. So people who come from a primarily hunting culture, like the Kalahari, has a different decision-making process. People who come from a primarily agricultural society have a different making set of decisions that they will make. That if I face a hunter who look at a cow, because it's been in the Kalahari for 10 years, look at the cow and fucking shoot it, because he doesn't know when it will have food again. A farmer will grow cows. The one is not superior to the other. They're both adapted.
Yeah, yeah.
They're optimized for your environment. You put that cow in the Kalahari, you must shoot the thing. The hunter must do the way it is because it's in that environment. The farmer lives in a different environment. Mm. Now, we think because we live in the same country, our environments are the same, and it's not. Because the person has more stability. The culture, who are more used to jobs being relatively available, relatively policing, housing, relatively available to the extent that your measure is, can you predict your immediate future for the next 2 weeks or a year? That's the main thing. Nothing to do with race, nothing to do with education. That's nothing to do with it. Can you, to what extent Are you comfortable with the prediction of your future? That's what will define your behavior.
Okay, but
not
both,
race,
both were,
or education, or
let's
culture.
Take both situations, or like I said, both sex here. Both were doing just fine, or both would do just fine. So that's the argument that most people come in a very stereotypical way and say, well, I mean, the hunters were doing just fine. They got the cows. I'm saying, so then there was obviously this foreign infrastructure and obviously approach to infrastructure that was introduced by obviously white colonialists. I get that. And that came in and it dominated. Right. It dominated.
Sure.
It dominated. Because it showed, quote unquote, it showed that version of growth. Right. The result of that. Of that infrastructure and its process, whatever it may be, right? Stripping the country of its culture, I think
it's
that's
a assimilation. It was an era of conquest. We got pride of conquest. Yay!
But we didn't strip culture.
Well, it's not the same. The Indians and American didn't die because of germs.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
died because of hunger, and that their souls died. But I don't have a problem with
That's true.
I don't have a problem with people who kill other people. All I'm saying, my insight was I'm for racism and I'm for murder. I think they're all very natural human things.
Oh.
My insight was just that I misunderstood the cause and effect relationship, which comes with a lot of subconscious.
It's cyclic. I'm going to stop you. It is. It's like it's the egg and the chicken. It's cyclic. Like cause comes from effect. Effect will then obviously result in cause.
I misunderstood it, but I'm saying what makes all humans the same is that our brains are machines. Our brains literally are prediction machines. That's all your brain does, your amygdala, and the rest of the world is full. So it's just making predictions, and what defines your behavior, and what the difference was between the Anglo-Saxons and the Britons and the Vikings was this thing.
Yeah.
The one people didn't have faith in the future. It wasn't part of their culture to think ahead.
Yeah, the
others
Vikings
did, and they were both white. So it has nothing to do with race, culture, education, but we think it does.
Yes.
Because the liberals made race about race and then pretended it wasn't about race.
Agreed.
Now we made racism about race, which is wrong. We must make people understand that people, black, white, or white, will make, in a certain situation, all of us will make decisions like this, and we don't, because we take the racial shortcut. It's easier.
Obviously.
Racism is lazy. It's not bad, it's just lazy.
But the problem still remains underneath.
Yes, I know. I can't solve the problem. I'm just interested that I found a new way to understand it.
I'm saying everybody's problem still remains. So you can blame it on that unless there is cultural warfare, I'm saying, between which there are, I mean, there are spots of it around the world all the time, right?
It's a numbers game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People are group animals. But if you don't want to be conquered, be in the strongest group. It's literally that simple. So in my group, the people who wanted to go to the council and ask for help, we lost the war. The people didn't want to. It's a numbers game. We lost, and the group with the numbers won. Now, two suburbs away, by the way, it went a different route.
No.
They had two errant streets in their house. They went to the council. They got their legal evictions team. It happened twice, and the problem is solved. It's a numbers game. Iemand gaan kak in die lewe. Probeer maak is nie jy nie. That's all I can tell you. And it's not fair, and it's not unfair. We are group animals.
Of course.
And if you want to survive,
independently,
be the strongest group.
Yeah, but independently, there's little to no difference you can make. And I know we've had many people make a difference independently, but it's not. They're part of a much bigger scheme, much part of a bigger structure, part of a story, whatever it may be, right? Yeah, you see, the thing is that once you start having blue eyes, as you say, right, do you feel the need to dictate like a new way of seeing, viewing, treating people around you?
Bizarrely enough, the more group conscious I became, and when I understood this dynamic, the more it made you realize that you can only ever evaluate a person as an individual. Because now you have a person in the street who belongs to a yellow group, a white group, a petition signing group, a mother group, person who looks after sick people group.
Right.
And you have to now evaluate everything very differently. And And the volatility in our street of group cohesion made you realize what Ubuntu is. It's a group consciousness in which you have to recognize each individual. It's very bizarre. I don't know how to explain it to you, except it's a feeling. It's like Mons Road is in a mist. And even the street above us, Lens, and the street below, Balliol, don't understand the mist. But once you go into the mist of Mons Road, and you're in this big blob that nobody can see, but it weighs you down, and you're aware of everyone in the group, because if I say this, then that group, ta-ta-ta-ta, whereas in the past, I would just go, ta-ta-ta-ta, I'm a light black now, tick-tick-tick-tick, fuck you, I go, shoot. Everything I do has a domino effect, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, and then it comes back. So that's
why I engage with the world around you besides...
Correct, and the group consciousness makes you value the individual more, but in a strange way. So now I don't trust anyone, but it doesn't bother me, because I understand all of us can go yellow at the drop of the hat. Everybody's my friend, everybody's my enemy, and all of you have the capacity to be everything in a different circumstance. So it's liberated me from expectations, which is very terrifying, I'm going to be honest with you. But I don't feel the need now to belong to a group, because I understand it's quite meaningless.
Yeah.
And won't give you safety. And you have to find a way in the world. And if you have close friends or family that you can vibe without any problems, it's an extraordinary gift.
It is.
But it's made me free now of being a liberal and of judging people on certain group characteristics. I now understand where I fit into this country.
Okay.
I now understand how the majority of this country... Because I understand Ubuntu, and it's not what people think it is. It's
what was sold in 1984 as?
It's a visceral experience of yourself in a group context. And the absolute knowledge that my presence in the group has an effect, and whenever I make a decision as an individual, it affects other people. Now, sometimes when the Ubuntu goes backwards, Ubuntu in reverse, it's the yellow bunch coming to switch the red and blues off. But when it goes forward, you also go as a group. But it's the capacity to not point fingers, because the argument is, it doesn't matter how we got into the situation. We're in the situation now. We're all in the situation together. Doof. Don't point fingers.
Within your own group.
Group. That we don't care how we got to the situation, and I understand that. Because I can blame the guy who's lost two illegal houses, broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
But he can blame Jan van Riebeek. Jan van Riebeek. So how far do you go back with the blame? And that's where I think they
you
have
go
it
as
point.
Far as you, as far as what gets you out of your line of sight. You don't care to do you take the initiative to say, this is my accountability, this is my responsibility. Well, can I actually stop looking at ghosts from even yesterday in the past?
I remember I was one of the pointing of the fingers. My finger was big and long. Now I'm selling my house. What do you think is going to happen to this house?
I know it sounds terrible, but do you care?
I do. I had a big moral dilemma.
Once it's sold.
No, because I've now almost made that decision that but I did have a long discussion. I've sold my house. What do you think is going to happen to it? They're going to make rooms.
Of course.
We still make this. So now.
But it's no longer your concern.
Sure. But that's what I'm saying. Now, it's not my problem anymore, because legally I've absolved myself, but morally have I? I'm not part of the problem. The people who move in next winter, do you understand what I'm saying?
About accountability.
The people who move in next winter, are they going to point fingers at me like I pointed fingers at that guy who did last week? That's why they all point fingers at the government. Sooner or later... And my point to the Mbizo was, if we are saying there are six houses in the street holding the rest of us to ransom, the 28 houses who do nothing are complicit.
I agree.
So we're all complicit. All I'm saying is now we're complicit. But now you understand the guy that says, don't point fingers. Look, he did it in an evil way, but he was right for the wrong reasons. If you argue it was the last straw that broke the camel's back, what about the first 20?
Okay, fair enough.
So these things become very, very circle forming.
Yeah.
But I leave here knowing that I started as a victim at the hand of the illegal electricity hijackers and I'm leaving as an accomplice. That I'm clear about. So I'm going from signing petitions to negotiating with an illegal electricity salesman, and it's the most natural thing to do.
Morally, is it a problem? No. You don't have to answer. It's a rhetorical question because it can't be. You're doing it. If you had a moral, I'm saying if there was some kind of moral objective here, you would have taken and gone another route, right? But you did what was necessary, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Now, morals are privileged by the people in a position of stability. Watch all your principles and moral rules go out of the room in a huff. The moment you're under pressure, nobody has morals. I promise you, there will be no principles.
No, that's
there
not...
There will be no principles.
You cannot say that. You can't say that. Because, I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of people that are in the worst and in the most of situations that do stay and say, I want to select or I want to retain certain kinds of moral, aspects or identity of my own identity so that I do not get lost in translation with myself.
It will disappear if you're in a minority. Most of us
really?
Do what I did. Yes. And that's what I'm trying to say to people. You think your morals are the cause of something. When you're in the smaller group. So
but
the people in Hampton still have principles, by the way, because they're in the majority.
People have died in the minority for their morals.
They are in the minority. That's what I'm saying.
But I'm saying to you, but they've died for them. They've died for this, and we know that through historically across the world that they've died because of they retained their morals and stood by them, and they were killed for it, crucified, or whatever it may have been. Doesn't really matter.
If they had adhered to a
larger narrative, they would have then survived and then have dropped those morals. I can understand that.
Most people do that, so I think the people that truly do that are rare. And then we're into this very complicated concept of what is a blooming moral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's selective.
Completely. But I can tell you, if I ever had morals, I don't have them anymore. That I can just confess, I have no morals. And if you had asked me 6 months ago, would I have negotiated for illegal electricity ports, I would have said, absolutely not. It's impossible. I stood as a counselor for the DA and I was a chairman. Impossible. In Isaac, no. I could hear my principles of morals. And I'm not free.
Follow us on Instagram @ChrisJordanMedia or go to my landing page, ChrisJordanMedia.net.